from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a reflection on D-Day and those that sacrificed, and the end of fetal tissue research through the National Institutes of Health. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. We begin today's show with some big news on the pro-life front. On Wednesday of this week, the Department of Health and Human Services announced that the National Institutes of Health will discontinue research involving the use of human fetal tissue from elective abortions. Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, chair of the House Freedom Caucus, joined Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about the move.
Congressman Meadows, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be back with you and with your listeners, and especially on this day where the president once again has shown that he is willing to stand for life and stand for those unborn that can't speak for themselves.
Yeah, this is one of those situations, Congressman, where the president himself leaning in on this, and this has been remarkable to watch over the last 2.5 years, that this president, the issue of life is not one that, other people have to tell him, hey, Mr. President, you need to do this. They kind of just point him in the direction, and he takes these things on.
Well, he takes them on, but I think even bigger than that, Tony, listen, let's be honest about it. When he was candidate Trump and not President Trump, a number of us in the pro-life community had concerns with whether he was going to be a fighter and a champion for life cause, or just be someone who says, yes, I'm pro-life and allow things to go as normal.
Which is what we normally get.
It's what we've always gotten, almost, with very few exceptions. There have been a few that have really been champions here. But let me just tell you, this is the most pro-life president we have had in the history of our country. Today's decision is no exception. He is a champion. He's not just an advocate. He's been a champion for pro-life, and all of the pro-life community should be applauding because this was a tough decision that he went against a whole lot of the bureaucrats here in Washington, D.C., to actually make sure that this happened.
Well, let's talk about the substance of this decision, Congressman Meadows, because what this is, you have to take it in the context of what we've seen in the last few years. You had the David DeLayden videos, undercover videos showing Planned Parenthood trafficking in human baby body parts. So that's a part of, there's this underground market almost for government or for baby body parts for research. But even though there may be some separation here, by the government funding this type of research, they're creating a demand, and therefore someone's going to meet that demand.
Well, they are creating a demand, and I think the thing that bothered me the most, and even bothered a lot of people who are not pro-life and maybe more pro-abortion, but when you start seeing dollar amounts attached to baby parts, and so, a liver or a lung or a brain, and you get different prices based on how long they've been in the mother's womb and when they were aborted. I mean, it just is disgusting. It is not something that a humane society and a civil society should ever do. And so, listen, you're going to hear all kinds of medical pushback where people are saying that this is going to affect medical research. And I'm here to tell you and your listeners, there are plenty of alternatives. And actually, I believe that there are a number of alternatives that are cheaper than what we're doing right now. But don't believe that lie when you hear it, because they're going to say, well, all of these wonderful things that could happen are now not going to happen. That's just not based on science.
Well, the reality is this type of research has been going on for quite some time and has led to no medical breakthroughs. And so the point here is that this is both unethical, but it's also ineffective in terms of this, what the use of fetal tissue has led to. Now, you mentioned there are other alternatives. The administration announcing today that already $20 million has been put into alternative research looking for the various breakthroughs in science. And this administration clearly is not anti-science. Let's talk about the practicalities of this decision today, where the administration has been looking, reviewing the use of fetal tissue for almost a year now, looking through these various contracts. Today, announcing that from this date forward, none of these existing contracts would be renewed, nor would new contracts be issued that would involve the use of human fetal tissue.
Well, they did, and I will say Secretary Azar and his team, along with those in the White House, working hand in glove to try to not only say that the existing contracts will not be renewed when they come up, but that they won't endeavor to try to set up a new procurement process. As you know, Tony, you alerted me to some of this as it was happening under the Trump administration, under the radar, where they were actually purchasing and doing new procurement contracts, and that's when the pro-life members of Congress actually kicked in. Now, here's why it's critical. It is the voice of your listeners that this administration is paying attention to, and it is the voice of their applause, both verbally and emails, that will continue to encourage this administration to stand strong, because the pushback is going to be tremendous, and the president needs to understand that this bold action really is noticed by his supporters.
Congressman Mark Meadows, as always, thank you. Thank you for your efforts on this as well, and great to have you on the program.
Well, thank you. God bless you, Tony, and thank you for being such a unbelievable sentinel to make sure that life is protected. It's today is a sweet day of you really reaping part of what you've done on behalf of so many that can't speak for themselves.
You can find out more about Mark Meadows, as well as ways that you can contact the president and encourage him as he continues to fight for life, when you visit TonyPerkins.com. You'll also find a link there to join us for the Values Voter Summit coming up in October in Washington, D.C. You'll join like-minded individuals as you hear from dozens of speakers talking about faith, family, and freedom. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That is frc.org/ABA laws.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Thursday, June 6th, was the commemoration of the great sacrifice made by American forces on the beaches of Normandy, France, a day commonly referred to as D-Day. On this 75th anniversary of D-Day, Tony sat down with Family Research Council's own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin to talk about his father, Cecil, who was part of the D-Day invasion. Here's Tony Perkins.
General, welcome back to Washington
Watch.
Thank
you, Tony. Glad to be with you.
Now, we're going to talk about the president's speech, because it was a remarkable speech.
Yeah.
Just remarkable. But your father, Cecil Boykin, was there at D-Day.
He was, Tony. That's why this is always a special day for me. On the morning of the 6th of June, he was driving a landing craft, delivering, I think, elements of the 1st Infantry Division at Utah Beach, at Omaha Beach. And suddenly there was an explosion. His landing craft was hit by a German mortar, and he woke up in the Naval Hospital in Portsmouth, Virginia, and did not have a recollection of what happened. And you know, it's interesting. He was blind in his left eye. He went through life like that. But it was not until I took him to see Saving Private Ryan that it all, he finally broke loose and was willing to talk about it. But that was after, you know, watching my dad, you know, weeping through Private Ryan, you know. So he was reliving it. And, you know, those young soldiers were 17, 18, 19 years old. These were teenagers. And they were not looking for a safe space other than on the other side of the German lines.
Yeah. And it's amazing as you read some of the letters that these young men wrote back to their families as they were embarking upon this invasion. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was so top secret. They didn't know exactly until the last moment where they were going, what was happening. So they took whatever they could and they scribbled out the notes to try to get back home.
Right. Yeah, we also need to remember, too, though, there was more than just the beaches in Normandy that day.
Right.
Three airborne divisions, two American and one British, parachuted in starting right after midnight on the day before. So, and then you had the OSS working with the French resistance movement. They're running sabotage operations all through the German occupied territories there. So there was a lot more than just the beaches.
The largest military operation in history, involving 156,000 men that were landing on the beaches, 1,200 planes, the airborne assaults that preceded the amphibious assault, which involved more than 5,000 vessels.
Mm-hmm.
It was a major, major operation, which they succeeded in basically keeping a secret.
That's right, and there were some very elaborate deception programs as well, and obviously the most obvious was putting George Patton up in northern England with rubberized tanks, and you know, they literally built a fake army around George Patton, because not only was Hitler convinced, but Rommel was convinced that Patton would lead the assault and he would come across at Calais. Because that was the shortest distance between the British
Isles. I think Patton was somewhat convinced that he was going to do it.
Well, I think he did until he got up there and they gave him rubber tanks. And then it dawned on him that he wasn't. But then there was also the deception of throwing a dead body dressed in a British military uniform off of a freighter on the coast of Spain with a dossier. And in that dossier was the whole plan, which showed them coming ashore at Calais.
Mm.
And the
elaborate deception.
That's right.
Absolutely right.
And it was eventually passed to the Germans.
General, when we come back, a little bit more about your father's story, because he didn't stop there. He went back into the military and ultimately retired with the Marine Corps.
Yeah, he did.
Well, I want to talk about that.
I got skeletons in my closet.
And then some clips of the president today, a brilliant speech on the shores of Normandy. That's coming up next on this special D-Day edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away. General Jerry Boykin is here with me. I hope you'll stay around as well. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about the future of our country? Do you want to help? Come to the Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans who, like you, want life to be valued, families to flourish, and religious liberty to thrive. Invited and confirmed speakers include Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. During our last segment, we began a conversation with FRC's Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and the sacrifices that occurred on D-Day 75 years ago, including by his own father, Cecil. Let's rejoin that conversation now.
General, we were talking about your father, Cecil Boykin, who was a part of the D-Day invasion, wounded in that invasion, lost an eye. But that didn't deter him from serving his country.
No, it's interesting, Tony. He took a discharge because he was disabled and went back to the tobacco farm in North Carolina and married my mom, as a matter of fact, and started the family. But then in 1950, the Army announced that they had a program that would take disabled veterans that could still function into the Army. And, of course, they were ramping up for Korea, so he went back in the Army. They took him. And after the Korean War, he was discharged a second time. But he just, you know, he loved serving, and he just loved serving in the military. So he went back and spent the next 32 years with the Marine Corps as a civil servant, to include a tour in Vietnam and several Mediterranean cruises and so forth. So he spent his life in the military one way or the other, and he took it very seriously in terms of service to his country.
And obviously that had a lot of influence on you choosing to make a career out of the United States Army.
Absolutely. No question.
You know, I was reading some articles this morning, and the media just doesn't seem to get this president. They were over there, you know, interviewing some of these 60 World War II veterans that made the trip over to be there for the 75th anniversary. And, you know, they were trying to look for those that would be criticizing the president because that he is backing away from, you know, these transatlantic agreements and
relations.
And to a, I mean, every one of them they interviewed said, "We love this president."
Yeah.
You know, as if they could, they would put the uniform back on and they would serve again.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason why not only men who are serving or women who are serving, but certainly veterans that appreciate this president. Part of it is you saw it in his speech today as he spoke of those that were there and served. And I want to play a couple of clips from the president's speech today in Normandy. Let's play, Bobby, play clip number 4.
Private First Class Russell Pickett of the 29th Division's famed 116th Infantry Regiment had been wounded in the first wave that landed on Omaha Beach. At a hospital in England, Private Pickett vowed to return to battle. "I'm going to return," he said. "I'm going to return." 6 days after D-Day, he rejoined his company. Two-thirds had been killed already. Many had been wounded within 15 minutes of the invasion. They lost 19 just from the small town of Bedford, Virginia alone. Before long, a grenade left Private Pickett, and he was gravely wounded, so badly wounded. Again, he chose to return. He didn't care. He had to be here. He was then wounded a third time and laid unconscious for 12 days. They thought he was gone. They thought he had no chance. Russell Pickett is the last known survivor of the legendary Company A. And today, believe it or not, he has returned once more to these shores to be with his comrades. Private Pickett, you honor us all with your presence.
That was just one of several stories that the president told, some of which were there honoring him. And of course, you saw one of the clips where he actually embraced one of the veterans.
Yeah. He went over and hugged this old veteran. Yeah. It got me, I'll tell you that. It got to me. And but you know, he said something else, Tony. He said that they were propelled by a force that no weapon could destroy. That was quite a statement. If you analyze what he was saying, number one, the fighting spirit of the American soldier. But he was also saying that the hand of God.
Well, let's play that clip. I've got that clip. Yeah. Clip number 5, Bobby.
These men ran through the fires of hell, moved by a force no weapon could destroy. the fierce patriotism of a free, proud, and sovereign people. They battled not for control and domination, but for liberty, democracy, and self-rule. They pressed on for love and home and country, the main streets, the schoolyards, the churches, and neighbors, the families, and communities that gave us men such as these. They were sustained by the confidence that America can do anything because we are a noble nation with a virtuous people praying to a righteous God. The exceptional might came from a truly exceptional spirit. The abundance of courage came from an abundance of faith. The great deeds of an army came from the great depths of their love. As they confronted their fate, the Americans of the Allies placed themselves into the palm of God's hand.
Again, just a remarkable speech. And, you know, when you earlier as we played the prayer of FDR, I mean, it's, I know Ronald Reagan was really good about this, but I tell you, this president is invoking America's faith in God in a more prominent way than I think any president in my lifetime.
Tony, he cannot be intimidated. I mean, he just refuses to be intimidated by the people that want to take all vestiges of faith out of our military. And I got to tell you, this is as good a speech as I've ever heard anybody give at any military ceremony or military occasion.
You know, when he talks about what motivated these men, these young men, 18, 19, 20-year-old men, who many of them, when they saw what they had to do, they realized they probably weren't going to come back.
That's right.
But they went anyway.
Yeah.
They wrote in their letters to their families that there was this transcendent cause that you talk about.
Right.
That the sacrifice was worth it because America was an exceptional nation, and it meant something to be an American, and it was worth the sacrifice. Those virtues were somewhat common in that day, more common than today, but fortunately our nation, our families continue to produce young men and women who are willing to make those sacrifices. But my fear is that if we lose that faith, that foundation that the president made reference to today in Normandy and that FDR prayed about 75 years ago, if we lose that foundation, how will we produce those individuals willing to make sacrifice?
Let me tell you, as far as I'm concerned, when you have a military without a foundation of faith, you have a mercenary organization. The fact of the matter is our entire system of laws in the military, Uniform Code of Military Justice, is based on a Judeo-Christian foundation. And when you have people that are going into combat and they don't know whether they're going to live or die, but, you know, they don't consider where they will spend the eternity, you've got a dangerous organization there. But if you go back and look at some of the photos of men and women crossing into Iraq since 9/11 or crossing into Afghanistan, and they have makeshift baptismals. Mm-hmm. They have ponchos in the ditches with water on them trying to get baptized before they go across because they want that relationship with God before they go across. I will tell you that the last administration did everything they could to stop that kind of open, free worship in our military. And this president is restoring that, and he's restoring it very rapidly. And you see it, I think, a lot in just the morale of our military today.
Well, of course, it's very important for those who are serving in our nation's military, but it is just as important that our families are free to exercise their faith so that we raise young men and women who are already rooted in the faith, who from that faith, and you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can tell you from my experience, and I'm sure, and I know you can't do it because we've talked about it, is that those who are drawn to military service are disproportionately Christians.
Yeah.
Because it says, Jesus said, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. Christians, believers, followers of Jesus understand sacrifice and are willing to make those sacrifices.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's intentional, but those who are seeking to destroy that element of faith and religious freedom in our country are indirectly putting at risk the very future of our country.
Well said. That's exactly what they're doing. And again, you look at those men that came across the beach in 1944 and you say, what kind of men would do this? Well, when they stepped off of those landing craft, it was no longer about the flag. It was about the guy on their left and right, the guy in front of them, the guy behind them. And it is the same today in our military. These young men and women go into some abysmal situations, and at some point it transitions to being a transcendent cause of wanting to make sure that they don't let their buddy down because they know that he won't let them down.
And I think it's important, and I think the president made reference to this, that it's important that this example, that 75 years in the rearview mirror mm-hmm. has been forgotten by many, and it's not taught in our schools any longer. And that's why, again, it's important as parents, as grandparents, to teach and to instill in our children and grandchildren this understanding. It's important to take these opportunities, like we are today, taking the entire radio program to talk about D-Day.
Yep.
To take them to Memorial Day services, to celebrate the 4th of July and all that. I mean, those type of things. If we don't do it, it's certainly not going to happen in the schools. It's not going to happen from the media. It's not going to happen from Hollywood. It's up to us to do that.
And part of the problem is my generation has let this happen, and my generation is responsible because we sat back for 50 years and watched the school systems gradually and incrementally remove history, critical history, about our founding fathers as well as the wars we fought.
Well, America's future depends upon the courage of people.
Yes.
Americans, as it always has. Now more than ever, the type of courage that's needed is moral courage.
Absolutely.
General, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.